Welcome to the Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast, covering the world of publishing and writing with your hosts, Rhiannon Frater and Lori Parker.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast. This is episode 4. Lori, can you believe it's episode 4?
No, it doesn't feel like it's been that many episodes yet.
I know, it's just kind of amazing. But we are at episode 4 and we're really excited today because we have an up-and-coming writer with us. Her name is Erin Hayes and we think you're going to have a lot of fun listening to her talk about how her career started and how working in advertising affects her career, writing career, and all sorts of fun stuff. So, and Lori and I have been friends with her on Facebook, right? Facebook?
Yes.
For quite a long time. And I've actually met Erin in real life at Texas Frightmare just a couple of weeks ago. So welcome to episode 4. We've got a lot of really cool things coming up and things to talk about. Some not so cool, some very cool. And right now we're going to do our latest news. So Lori, you have something coming up this summer with Contagious Reads. Tell us all about it.
The girls and I are going to watch, we're calling it the Contagious Reads Summer of the Zombie, and we're going to watch zombie movies that people suggest to us. I mean, we will watch anything, and we're going to review them on the blog. We are thinking about maybe doing a live or recording one at the end of the summer, and then our hope is to have a big giveaway at the end of the summer with maybe like our top 3 favorite movies or something like that. So we're pretty excited. We're really excited about that.
And that sounds like a lot of fun, and I think it's going to be really great because people are always asking me for my recommendations on zombie films, and they're often surprised at my recommendations because they haven't heard of it. Maybe something that I like that they hadn't heard about. So this is going to be really cool. If you love zombie movies, like I love zombie movies, you're going to have a ton of fun with this. And confession time, December 26th, every year, the day after Christmas, my family has a zombie marathon all day. All we do is watch zombie movies and eat pizza.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun. And talking about zombies, I have an update. I am going to have a new release. I don't have an official release date yet, but fingers crossed it may be out this month or early June. It's called Zombie Tales from Dead Worlds, and it's a collection of short stories, but they're fully contained stories. It's not like, it's like mini novels in a way, or a really good mini movie. It's not like a little segment of a story. It's actually a full complete story, and Lori's been beta reading for me.
Yes.
And what do you think?
They're very, very good. I'm having a hard time not asking you to like write more because I know how much you love that.
No, I got more coming. I mean, this book is going to have quite a lot of stories in it.
Last one you sent me, I'm like, this can't be it. Like, I want to know what happens next, but I don't. I want to be able to read stuff for in the future, guys, so I don't ask those questions.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, well, I mean, but the stories are all complete. I mean, they're like an entire story. I mean, it's not like I stop. I hate short stories where you're reading and then it stops. It's almost like the writer lost interest, just stops the story. These are actually, these have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's just like, I had one of the other betas say, hey, I really want you to continue writing in this world. I'm like, but the story finished. But yeah, but the world's still there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very excited about this because a lot of times I'll have ideas, zombie idea, like a zombie story idea, but it's not like novel length, you know, it's not like trilogy length or series length. It's just this really compact, very concise story that kind of, it's shorter but full. And for a long time I didn't know what to do with those. And finally it's like, you know what? People want zombie stuff for me. I like writing about zombie worlds that are maybe not exactly like our own. Like one of the stories which you read is actually far in the future. It's been fun kind of writing that. So Zombie Tales from Dead Worlds will be coming out maybe this month, May, or June. And on the blog, I will put the Goodreads link so you guys can add that to your to-read list so you'll know when it comes out. So that's our latest news, all zombie related, even though this is not a zombie podcast, I swear. but zombies have, you know, they tend to infect you, and, you know. So
yeah, once you've been bitten, you can't go back.
We promise we'll do something fun like vampires in the future, because there's a bunch of vampire films I love that nobody's ever heard about. So we'll have to do that. In the future. Maybe in November. So
maybe.
November's a good month for vampires. Don't ask me why. I know why. Because I always write Tale of Vampire Bride during November. So there you go.
Yes.
So going on to Burning Up the Book Sphere, the latest in the publishing buzz. This came to my attention on Twitter. And I actually really do like this blog, Smart Bitches, Trashy Books, All the Romance, None of the Bullshit. Yes, that is an actual blog name. But they brought it to my attention, and I brought it to Lori's attention. You may not have heard about it, but HarperCollins that owns Harlequin is being acquired by News Corp. HarperCollins and News Corp are acquiring Harlequin, sorry. So that means there's basically a takeover of another publishing house occurring. And the reason why this merger, well, mergers are always a concern in the publishing world. When one company takes over another company, there's always a question of like, what editors are going to remain, what books series are going to be continued, or are they going to be canceled? What writers will be shifting over to the new publisher? Will contracts be canceled? What does it mean for the readers? What does it mean for bookstores? What is it? I mean, it has repercussions that are long-lasting to the publishing world. I mean, it used to be the publishing six, now it's publishing five. So the big publishers, as they compact down into one mega publisher, how is that going to affect the publishing world? I mean, that's the main question. But you wouldn't know that from the way that the media started reporting it. And one of the things that Smart Bitches and Trashy Books brought to everyone's attention was the way that the main media was portraying this acquisition. And so one of them was from CNN. Harlequin has fallen for a charming billionaire. Harlequin swooped up by News Corp. Seriously. So basically what it comes down to is, because Harlequin is a romance novel publisher, they're going to treat this incredibly significant merger like it's insignificant, like they're just minimalizing the impact by basically using sexist terminology.
Yeah, I mean, there's what that same CNN thing, like the end of the first sentence or whatever that she even put it up here for people to read, is that News Corp, the publishing company chaired by Robert Murdoch, said Friday that it would pay $415 million to get Harlequin. And then they ended their sentence by, Murdoch is consequently newly single. Like,
coincidentally newly single. Yeah. And they call it bodice rippers too. It's a bodice ripper. So basically it's like, oh yeah, Murdoch is coincidentally newly single. So what, they think he's going to spend $415 million on acquiring Harlequin so what, he can get a date?
Yeah.
It's just... So... The thing, again, this goes down to the way that women's literature, or things that are perceived as being women's literature, are treated. And I'm not a big romance novel fan, per se. I like gothic romance a lot, like Jane Eyre. I like Victoria Holt novels. I used to, when I was younger, read a lot of suspense romance, like Phyllis Whitney and stuff like that. But as I grew older, I got more into the paranormal stuff. So I really liked, I think I've read only a few paranormal romances, and they were pretty cool for what they were. But I'm not a huge romance fan, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to turn around and basically run down the genre as being insignificant, because a lot of people really enjoy it. Not only women, but men too.
Yeah.
And I was really horrified by this, because it even got worse, because I think they said that further down, if you read down on this particular blog, somebody actually wrote the news write-up as what they perceived a romance novel scene to be like, where Harlequin is True, her sales had sagged and he was desperate for money to pay for his $160 million debts. And she had to remember, it was News Corp, the courted tour star. The wandering eye wasn't his, not at first, anyway. I mean, what is this crap?
Yeah.
So what did you think when you saw it? I mean, seriously.
I was pretty mad that they would just throw and not only that, but I hadn't heard of it. You know, when Penguin was being, and Penguin and Random House were acquiring, everybody was like, what are we going to call it? Random Penguin, you know, like, and it was big news. And this is literally the only thing I've seen.
Same here. Again, it goes back to the fact that it's perceived as being women's literature or women's fiction. So why does anybody care? But the Random House Penguin thing is still having far. I mean, they had to get approval for that merger. And a lot of people are going to, you know, there's a fear of a lot of people that they were going to lose their jobs, you know, because of the merger. And it always puts authors in a weird position, too, because, you know, what is your contract going to look like? Because you had a contract with this other publisher. Well, what is the new publisher going to offer you? What are the royalty rates? What are you going to get as an advance? Are they going to want to continue your series? Are they going to want to buy more books from you? And Harlequin, it's the same thing. I mean, they put out so many books.
And they, you know, I think a lot of people, when they think Harlequin, they think, you know, your mom's, those little thin romance novels that your mom reads with the white covers. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think that, but there's a lot of great YA authors that are published through Harlequin Teen. So, I mean, they publish almost everything.
Yeah, they do. And also, they started doing Nocturne, Harlequin Nocturne, which was kind of more, I don't know, science fiction horror. I mean, horror, sorry, take it back. It was more of a, like, horror with romance or romance with horror, I don't know, mixing it up. And then they started another line. I can't remember what the name it was, but it was more science fiction in romance, because they realized that there was a need for those, and they responded to the request of their readership. So Harlequin has always been very proactive, I think, in responding to their readers. They honor their readers. And Harlequin has had problems in the past, you know, with their sales dropping, and there's been some controversies behind the veil, you know, like what are the royalty rates and all that kind of stuff. But again, I think what really bothers me about this is that romance gets a bad reputation anyway, even though it's like the number one selling genre.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, seriously, look at the New York Times bestseller list and everything. And even like Nicholas Sparks, who claims he's not a romance writer. I mean, come on. He writes the mushiest stuff. You know, so, you know, romance is huge business. And when, you know, the media as a whole makes a joke out of this huge, what should be huge news to the publishing world and to writers, they make a joke out of it and dismiss it because they consider it to be about women and women's needs and women's viewpoint. It's very disappointing.
Yeah.
And I do want to point out that a lot of writers who write, you know, paranormal romance or write romance or contemporary, when they get picked up by Harlequin, that's a huge badge of honor for them.
It is.
So Harlequin is, you know, that's never been one of my big goals, to write for Harlequin, but I've known people who it was. And I think that, you know, I wanted to write for Tor and I got to write for Tor. So people who want to write for Harlequin, I don't think they should be mocked for that. And that was, again, the sexism in the publishing world exists, and we see it in genre. We see it in the way sometimes readers won't pick up books by female writers in certain genres and stuff. And I hope one day people will just judge all writers on the merit of their writing, whether they're male or female.
Yeah. So I think that self-publishing has sort of changed the way I read. I mean, because the only place you can buy books in my small town is Walmart. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of the Nicholas Sparks, Jodi Picoult, you know, sort of thing. And I'm not really into that. Mm-hmm. So, and I do mainly read female writers, and it's not on purpose. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that self-publishing, what I see when I go on Amazon, are female writers.
Well, they're able to break into genres they may not have been able to do before because they aren't writing under the romance tag. I mean, let's be honest, for a long time, I mean, I still get it in my life where people go, well, why don't you just write a nice romance? Why don't you just write contemporary romance or something? So when you write in a different genre from romance, I think it's a lot harder to break in with the publishing houses, or you feel intimidated in an attempt to do it. So maybe you just quit before you even try, like especially with science fiction. Science fiction has a serious problem with sexism. So, you know, Harlequin has been the goal for a lot of female writers for a long time, and male writers who hid behind female names to write romance novels. And I think with self-publishing, female writers are able to put whatever they want out. They can write in whatever genre they want, and it's going to be up to the reader whether or not they like it or not.
Yeah.
So that's where self-publishing has changed so much for so many. But anyways, we wanted to share that with you, you know, and the fact that it's just evidence once again that we have a long way to go in breaking down, you know, some of these sexist stereotypes. It's going to take a while, because when people say that Nicholas Sparks isn't a romance novel, a novelist, I laugh. So, yeah. Anyway, any last thoughts before we move on?
No, I think we covered pretty much how not cool the whole entire thing is.
Yeah, it's really bothersome. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it in the future once they stop snickering about bodice rippers and the actual financial fallout starts hitting writers and editors. And I'm sure we'll actually get real news reporting at some point in the future, and we'll let you guys know what's up with that. So we're on to our recommendations, because we believe that you can get creative inspiration from various places. And we both picked video games this week, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
I picked Fallout New Vegas. I really love Fallout New Vegas, and I was really inspired a lot when I was playing it, like, very religiously, and I actually played myself into a corner, and I'm going to restart the game, because I do this thing when I play. My husband always makes fun of me. Like, when I play a video game and I have no clue what I'm doing, I just kind of flounder around until I figure it out. And by the time I kind of figured out with Fallout New Vegas, I kind of borked myself. So now that I know what I'm doing, I'm going to restart the game. But it's really fun. And the thing I really like about Fallout New Vegas is you can make a character that's either male or female. You tailor your character, you create the character that you want, and you pick their route through the world. You know, whether they're going to be, you know, killing everybody in sight or trying to help people. And it's a really cool world. It's in the... See, this is where I get confused, because there's a Nevada and Nevada. See, Nevada is in Texas. Nevada is the state. There we go. See, that's the problem with living in Texas. You rename things. So it takes place outside of Las Vegas, and it's really this cool post-apocalyptic landscape. I just, you know, the thing that really, when I was playing it, it started getting my juices going for apocalyptic fiction, for dystopian, for alternate realities. I was having so many amazing ideas when I was playing the game, and not necessarily anything connected to the game itself, but it just really just had those creative juices going. And I remember, like, I would fall asleep and dream these crazy stories that one of them ended up being The Last Bastion of the Living. So, or parts of The Last Bastion of the Living. So I think games can really, the creativity that's behind them, the visuals and everything, can really help inspire you. So if you're looking for inspiration, like in a post-apocalyptic world, if you want to get your brain kind of geared in that direction, then I highly recommend Fallout New Vegas. And there's actually this really cool mods that are out there. I think they're the Nexus mods is where you can find them, that make the game even more dynamic and more exciting. And I just highly recommend it. So Lori, you had a recommend, which is?
Plague Inc. And I recommend it because it's a great time waste.
What kind of game is it? By the way, Fallout New Vegas is on your PC. So Plague Inc., where can you play it?
On your tablet. Or on your smartphone.
Oh no.
So it's like, you know, a good way to waste your lunch break.
Okay, so what is Plague Inc. all about?
It's not like a first person viewpoint. It's just a map of the world, and you pick a virus or a bacteria or something, and you go and you infect the world, and you get to kill everybody. I love it.
So basically, if you want to be inspired in mass murder,
Yes. And you, like, you have to, like, strategically place it in a place. You know, if you pick hard, if you pick easy, you're going to mainly win the game all the time, which is why I play it on easy, because I don't like losing. But if you pick, like, the harder, then you have to pick, like, a strategic place to place your virus or whatever to infect the world before the scientists cure it.
I love it. I want to play it. So your game recommendations is either an extremely immersive PC game called Fallout New Vegas or Plague Inc., which can be played on your tablet or your smartphone. And so that's our recommendations for inspiration for this week.
I'm very excited about our interview today because it's with Erin Hayes, who's an up-and-coming author. And Lori and I both agree that you guys should check her out now before she blows up. Right, Lori?
Exactly.
And we have had kind of more established authors on before Erin, but we also want to pay attention to authors that are coming down the pipeline that maybe you don't know about yet, that you want to keep your eye on and just see what they're up to, and also to talk to her about what it's like to be at the starting point of your writing career. So Erin Hayes is with us today, and let me tell you a little bit about her. She's a sci-fi junkie, video game nerd, and wannabe, how do you say this?
Manga
yes. Artist. Erin Hayes writes a lot of things. Sometimes she writes books like fantasy mysteries, like Death is But a Dream, and sci-fi middle grade books like Jacob Smith is Incredibly Average. And you can reach her at erinhayesbooks.com, and she'll be happy to chat, especially if you want to debate Star Wars. And trust me, she does debate Star Wars. I have discovered this myself, because I'm one of those people who watch the 6 movies and that's all I know about Star Wars, and she's like uber nerd and has read like what, comic books.
I had the trading card game. I've read a lot of the expanded universe and everything there is to do with Star Wars. Yes.
And I'm thrilled out of my mind about the new movie because Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill are all back, but Erin's being a hater.
I just, after those prequels, I'm just really skeptical.
So that's kind of our nerd talk, just so you know. So if you want to do eat Star Wars with her, you can do it all you want.
Yes, please.
So anyways, we're really excited to have her here today. So Erin, just really quick, you work in advertising. You've lived overseas in New Zealand, but you weren't friends with Peter Jackson, apparently.
No, he refused my friend request on Facebook.
You would have stalked him. He was smart.
Yeah, very true.
You went to University of Texas, and you are very familiar with my town, Austin.
I love it, yes.
And you're now living in Birmingham, Alabama, which is basically Tornado Alley.
Yep, as we found out a couple weeks ago.
And you're married with a cat.
Yes.
So that's your exciting
thing. Yes, it is.
And you're in advertising. I think I said that.
Yes.
So how old were you when you realized you wanted to be a writer?
I'd always been telling stories. I actually, when I was about 3 years old, I had a Barbie doll that was dating my Swamp Thing action figure. So they had their own story. But I finally started typing on my computer when I was about 9 years old. And ever since then, I grew up. I started writing in high school and kind of lost it in college a bit, but then picked it up again just recently.
How recent did you just pick it up?
About 4 years ago.
So what was your first real novel published or written in? What genre?
I wrote the paranormal romance novella Embracing Her Wolf. I published that in, I think, September of 2011, and I had no idea what I was doing at that time.
And that is that when you became serious about writing?
I would say I became a little bit more serious once I kind of understood everything, but that was my very first thing I pushed out to the world and was like, here you go. And then maybe a couple months later, I realized that you have to do a whole lot more in order to make this work.
So why did you decide to self-publish that one?
Because I had written it, and about 8 months before, my mother had bought me a Kindle, and I was looking through it, and I realized that there was this whole set of authors that were self-publishing and putting their own work out there. And because I had written this story, I was just like, well, that's one way of, you know, finally publishing a book after decades of trying. So I put it out there, and that's how it got started.
And you've written a lot of books in a lot of different genres. Are you worried that you might confuse people by
by doing that, by bouncing around?
Oh, definitely. I confuse myself. But it's one of those where it's hard to stick to a genre, especially for me, because I always write as I say, which character I have in my head that's yelling at me the loudest. And sometimes that's in paranormal werewolf romance novels, sometimes that's in kids' middle grade books, and sometimes that's in, you know, horror stories, which I just finished up writing.
Fractured,
yeah. Yes.
So which genre is easiest to write in? Like, every genre has its own rules, you know. Horror has its rules, middle grade has its rules, you know, paranormal romance has its rules. So which one of those was easiest for you so far?
I can't really say that anyone was more easier compared to the next, because, as I said, it just, so long as I was immersed and interested in it and that character was still yelling at me quite loud, I could write it down. And just so long as I was having fun with it, I find that whatever I enjoy currently, I find that it's easier to write in that genre. So whether it's horror or it's whatever, if I'm having fun with it, it just flows out from my fingertips.
So the flipping the coin on that, what do you think would be the hardest genre that you've written in?
I think I found horror to be my latest novel was a horror novel. And I did struggle with that, but I think it wasn't necessarily the genre. It was how I approached it. I was trying to do it by the seat of my pants. I hadn't outlined it. And I finished the book and realized that it was quite a different beast on paper than what I had originally wanted to write. So I had to go back and clean it up after 8 revisions.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Lori and I know about revision hell, don't we, Lori?
It's never ending.
You've been revising yours. How many revisions are you in on yours right now, Lori?
I'm on my 4th.
Yeah.
I feel like I finally found the right approach to it, though.
It's hit or miss, though. I mean, sometimes, like, some revision is, like, really easy. It's just a little tidying up, and then others you're, like, ripping the book apart, going, oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm, like, Frankensteining all 4 different versions right now.
And that's what happened with Fractured. I had to go back. One of my characters, her motivations changed from being just this despicable person that you didn't care about to someone that you had to, because she was so essential to the story, you had to care about what happened to her at the end. So I had to go back and basically fix all of her scenes, fix all of her thoughts, fix all of her, the way she spoke, fix all of her backstory to make her be a more sympathetic character.
Of course, revision is part of writing, but the original rough draft, I'll make a confession here. One of the hardest books I ever wrote, and I did 3 different versions of it, was Tale of the Vampire Bride. I originally wrote it in first person. Then that felt too intimate, so I tried writing it in third person. That was completely off, and it kind of stuttered to an end, and I went back to first person, and I was finally able to finish it. So it took me a long time. So on average, how long does it take you to finish a book now?
If I am in the groove, I can finish it within about 3 months. Fractured took me, I started that one in November of 2012, and I just sent it off to my editor. Oh, granted, that's with all the revisions and everything like that, mm-hmm. But it generally takes me about 3 months to write a book that I feel is a complete draft.
Those complete drafts are like, people don't understand. See, what you can do is you can write a rough draft in 2 weeks. But it's not worth publishing at all. Really, I mean, you can write a rough draft in like, and sometimes it's like 2 to 3 weeks, and it's like the fundamental of the story is there, but then you have to go in and you got to flesh all of that out. You got to put the flesh on the bones. So it can take a long time. I mean, Lori's been working on her book for how long, Neil, dear?
A year and a half.
But that's your first.
Yeah,
that's
the rough draft took me 3 months. Mm-hmm. But then as I was going back through it, I was like, this is like a rough outline. This isn't a story told completely. So.
And there are self-published books that I have found where they feel like rough outlines that if they had just had a bit of more meat on those bones, it would have been a great story. So kudos on you, Lori, for recognizing that and going back and, you know.
I have a lot of writer friends. They tell me how to do it. I've gotten lucky.
Yeah. I think that's one of the really big important things is if having a support group when you're writing a book. And I know that, Erin, you've become a part of my support group, and I hope I'm part of yours.
Definitely.
But it's one of those things where, like, when you're writing is it's a strangely solitary endeavor in the beginning, and then there's a point where you have to turn it over to other people to get their, like, to get their input into where you may be misstepping, and that's always a awkward awkward definitely, moment.
definitely. Yeah. Beta readers, when you first hand off that first draft to beta readers, I mean, it could be great feedback. It could be like, you know, your book is pretty good and, you know, you just need some slight revisioning. Sometimes you get off to beta readers and they come back and go, what was that?
So this is an outline, right, Erin? Yes.
You know, does it get easier as, I mean, I really want to know, does it get easier as you go? Like, to finish a book.
Are you saying with just one novel, or
like as you're publishing more and more, is it getting easier to finish a book?
I think once I had the knowledge that I could finish a book, I was just like, all right, I can actually do this. And that in of itself helps me to push myself to finish my whatever I'm working on at that moment, because it does become easier. But sometimes you do want to just like take your computer and bash it into a wall because your characters are not cooperating.
I gotta say, though, as somebody who's written, how many books have I written? I don't remember. I've written a lot. It does get easier to finish, because I think when you know you've done it once and then you've done it twice and three times, the more books you write, the easier it becomes for you to have the faith that you can finish this latest one, because there's always that point, and you gals probably both know this, yes. And the halfway point, usually it's about halfway through the book, you hate it, you think it sucks, you don't know why you started writing this book to begin with, the characters aren't cooperating, you're not even sure if you're off the plot, you just kind of get all crazy, and that's usually the point where I have to walk away for a day or two and then come back. I do this, I don't know what y'all do, but I come back and I read everything I've written up to the point where I stopped. And that's usually when I go, oh, I'm not screwing up. It's okay.
Yeah, see what I do whenever I start hating where I am in a book, I end up writing a scene later on that I'm looking forward to writing. So I kind of, it gives me incentive to go back and make sure that what I am writing at that point meets that and is as good as it can be. And those tend to be sex scenes sometimes.
Mine are all murder scenes. What does that say about me? I'm like, man, I gotta kill something. This is boring.
Well, one time I was writing a book and I had to stop it for quite a few months because in one paragraph I had killed four characters.
So, you know. You're like, well, I, you know, it's weird. I don't usually do the write to the... to a scene at the end of the book, except with one series, and that's the Vampire Bride series. There's always one scene in that book where I want to get there, and I write that one because it's really close to my, like, the surface of my head, and then I know where I'm heading, so it becomes easier to write everything to it. I will tell you a little story. I was writing Pretty When She Destroys, the third book, and Pretty When She Dies, and the starting point I had was this scene that takes place in a Denny's in Waco, Texas, and it's Samantha and Amalia. I thought this is the first scene of the book. It wasn't. And I was writing along, and suddenly I realized it's not the first scene of the book. So then I'm like, so where does it start? So then I got this other scene. So I go back, and I start writing from that scene, and I'm writing forward, and suddenly I realize that's not the beginning of the book either. I keep going back until I actually find the beginning of the book. So I had these like milestones where I started writing. So every time I hit one of those milestones, I go like, okay. And what's funny is what I thought was the beginning of the book was actually way toward the end. So,
and I know what scene you're talking about. Yeah.
It's so funny because it's kind of like, wait, this is toward the end of the book. Wait. So writing is kind of bizarre.
It's a very fluid process. Very, you know,
it's mental illness at its best. I mean, seriously, there's a recent study that came out that there's a part of a writer's brain that never shuts off, and it's very similar to other mental disorders. And I'm like, if they one day say, you know, being a writer is some kind of mental disorder, I would not be surprised, because I literally feel like there's a part of my brain that never shuts off. Like, it's always working on stories. It's always spying on other worlds and characters and stuff.
Well, I was with a friend in Auckland, and we were at the musical Wicked, and I, you know, halfway through the second half of the show, I get this scene in my head for a sequel to one of my books. And I'm just like, I need to write this down. I need to write this down. So I spent the entire second half of Wicked just trying to replay this in my head so I could at least get it to a good point where I can write it down later. I went home and wrote it down, and it's safely saved on my computer for when I get to it. But I had no idea what happens in the second half of Wicked.
It's so true. And I really hate the suck so much because, like, I will be somewhere and I'll be having a conversation with somebody and I'll see something out of the corner of my eye that instantaneously gets my creative juices going. And all of a sudden, it's like, I feel like I have to say, excuse me, I have to leave this world for a second.
Yes.
And it's like, there are people who get it and people who don't. And my husband, like, I always remember sitting in a restaurant with my husband on date night. I didn't talk to him the entire time. I was just sitting there writing this scene out. And he just was like, okay. I did the same thing on my honeymoon. We went on my honeymoon and that's where I conceived the idea for the Mesmerized. And I'm like, he's like, where do you want to go now? I'm like, I have to go back to our suite. I have to write this whole idea down. I wrote the entire synopsis for the Mesmerized on my honeymoon.
Awesome.
Writing.
So it's nice to know that I'm not alone in my, worlds I have in my brain.
Mine usually comes to me when I'm in the shower.
But when I was. What it is about that shower.
But even when I was, like, in college and I'd be studying, stuff would just finally click for me in the shower.
Yeah. I think it's because it's quiet. It's the white noise and you're, like, you know. That's my theory, because I do too. I used to have ideas come to me when I'm sitting in a bubble bath. I'm like, wait, I got the greatest idea. I know what, you know.
So what we're saying is that all our showers and bathtubs are TARDISes to different universes?
Pretty much, yeah. Geek reference, Doctor Who. 10 is the best! Sorry.
Agreed.
Though once in a while, I cheat on 10 with 9. I admit it, but anyway. So anyways, Erin, you do have a full-time job in advertising. And
yes, I do.
So when do you write? In the morning, at lunch? When do you manage to get time?
Well, since I have so much trouble waking up in the mornings. What tends to happen is I will come home from work and, you know, I might have pulled like a 10-hour, 14-hour day, but I will come home and force myself to write a quota that I've set, which is usually about 1,700 words. So it's one of those where you have to just fight through it. And sometimes that 1,700 words will take me, you know, an hour and a half. Sometimes it will take me 5 hours. So it's just a matter of powering through it to make sure that I am getting the story out and can, like, just writing it. And, you know, I have to go to work. I have to do all this stuff. But at the same time, I still have to get the book out to the world.
Yes. Speaking of getting the book out to the world, I think everybody knows by now that self-publishing has grown to what it is, that an editor is needed. So
absolutely.
How did you choose what editor you used?
I was looking through self-published books that I thought were, you know, felt like a traditionally published novel that felt they were well edited and well executed. And I, you know, at the beginning of those, they always say edited by so-and-so. And I reached out to those authors and reached out to those editors. And I have my working team, Rianne, and I reached out to you, I remember, to see who edited your books.
Yeah.
And the lovely Felicia A. Sullivan edited yours, so I use her for some of my books, and I also use Gabrielle Faust as an editor for some of my books as well. And she, they're really, really great.
They are, and Gabrielle is a editor of her own small press, and she's published through Permuted, and she's writes for Gothic Beauty and stuff. So, I mean, there's people that I think. One of the things about editors, and I think you'll agree with me, with Felicia and Gabrielle, is they retain your voice. A good one
will
retain your
voice. Which is so important.
They will get you for all the little grammatical and punctuation stuff, and if you misstep with your plot or your characters. But a good one will let you keep your voice. And those two.
Although you will get emails saying, do not ever use these words again.
Yeah, Felicia, yeah. My editor, who I share with Erin, she's also my editor for Permuted Press books, will send me these emails where the text basically fills the screen. One word at a time, you're scrolling to see what you're in trouble for.
And it's one of those things where you have to pull the popcorn and just say, this is going to get good.
Yeah, I'm in trouble now.
Love you, Felicia.
So since you're in advertising and you know how important imagery is, can you tell us about your cover artist? Because I know you put a book out with a cover you didn't like, or you did it yourself and thought it was fine, but other people didn't like it. And that was,
yes, Jacob Smith is incredibly average. That was the second book I had published, and I, thinking I was a good designer, had done this cover and put it out, and I would show it to people and they go, So I had used Victoria Faye from Wit and Wear Design for another cover. And I reached out to her because I knew she did children's middle grade covers. And I reached out to her and she redid the cover for it. And I think it looks so much better.
So cover artists are important.
Yes, they are. Definitely. Working in advertising, that is the billboard that will sell your books.
Definitely.
You know, you're talking about advertising and how you know it's sort of given you the knowledge about having that billboard. Has it helped with your social media presence at all? Like, do you know, has it helped you sort of be able to manage that?
I know what I should do, and I'm trying to get into doing that a bit better. Living in New Zealand, I found that the time difference was quite hard to be active on Twitter and everything. So I'm just now trying to, you know, gain a Twitter base and everything like that. But I do know that social media is a very, very important part of, you know, building your fan base and, you know, making sure that your books are seen by the public.
I think it's also really important for networking because I met Aaron on Twitter.
Yes.
And Lori on Facebook.
Yeah, so, I met Lori on Facebook as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that's where social media also helps you network with people who can actually help you with your career and move things forward. Not only reaching out to readership, but just,
yeah,
you know, say, I do think it's really important for you to be as genuine a person as possible when you're on social media. And that's one of the things that you and Lori do very well. You're very genuine with who you are and don't put up a false front.
It's really hard to cover up the nerdiness with a false front, to be honest.
Yeah, and you can always tell those authors that are just selling books.
Uh-huh, yes. Yeah. Because Aaron will geek out.
Yeah. And absolutely. I think people would rather see the genuine side than the...
Yeah. When Aaron's geeking out, I showed her Universe online store, and it has, like, all of this Doctor Who and Star Wars and Walking Dead stuff. I'd bought leggings from them, which are quite comfortable, by the way, and I showed it to Aaron, and she was just, must buy all the things, and she posted that on Facebook, and I thought... That's the kind of thing I like about when people are genuine on social media, when authors are genuine, because then you kind of get a taste of, ah, oh, Aaron's a geek.
And if you are a geek as well, we will get along just fine.
That's the Star Wars debates.
Yes.
So, Aaron, do you think you'll ever publish with a big publisher, or do you think you're going to keep going with the self-publishing thing?
We'll just see what happens. I would be interested in seeing how the whole traditional publishing works. But at the same time, it's just whatever will get my stories out there.
It's a whole new world for writers, though. I think that's the gloriousness of it. Cause in the old days, you had no choice. You had to go through an agent. You had to go through, you know, the acquisitions editor. And
I remember when I was little, I was looking into, you know, how to reach out to, you know, agents and publishers and stuff like that. And I remember stumbling on a self-published press where you had to buy, you know, 1,000 mm-hmm. copies of the first run of your book. And I showed it to my mom, and my mom goes, no.
And those copies were like, what, $15 a pop too?
They were expensive, yes.
Yeah, vanity. So, that's vanity publishing. It was a scam pretty much. But it's really cool because, I mean, all three of it, I'm a hybrid. Lori's going to self-publish, right, Lori?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And Aaron's self-published with an open mind to hybrid, so.
Absolutely.
It's a cool new world, though, for writers. And that's when
I'm excited to be a part of it, yeah.
That's why we wanted to have you on, because you're at the beginning of all this. I mean, you're kind of seeing what's happened with other people, too, the good and the bad. You know, you're getting a good idea of what can go wrong or what can go right.
Yes. Which, you know, sometimes it can go very wrong and sometimes it can go very right. So yeah. Just hopefully something very right will happen soon.
Well, you're a good writer and you've got a good attitude. So you're right there. That's good.
Thank you.
Just wondering, how do you decide what you're going to write next?
As I said, it is the character that is shouting at me the loudest. Right now, I have about 7 books that are begging to be written and I only have some time for so much. And right now, it is a really, really interesting character and a really, really interesting story that I'm currently sitting down to write. So it's the one I'm most looking forward to, but it's also just the one that is begging to be put to paper.
So you are going to share with our audience, with our listeners.
A free street short story. Yes. It's a ghost story. It's about a man who was a psychopath and he haunts this electric chair that killed him. And he finally founds the girl of his dreams.
It sounds cool. And you'll be able to find that on our website. So, and it'll free fiction that you can read. And you're also doing a giveaway. You're giving away to 5 listeners.
Any ebook in my library, yes.
Awesome. So make sure you go by our website and enter the giveaway, and also read Erin's free fiction. And if you like it, please check out her other books. She's got a diverse number of books out there.
Kids' picture books to werewolf romances. So
you've got Death is But a Dream, which is really cool, a fantasy mystery with the Greek gods. Yes. You have Jacob Smith is Incredibly Average, which is about aliens seeking out the most average boy on the face of the planet, right?
Because he is the best. He's the perfect human specimen. He's the most average, normal person in the world.
And you have Fractured coming out in the summer, is that correct?
It is in the summer. It'll be published in July.
Okay, and that's a horror suspense novel, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then you have a children's picture book. What's the name of that?
It's called Bedtime at the Zoo.
Oh, it sounds so cute. Maria needs that, Lori.
Maria has it.
Oh, Maria has it. Oh, cool.
Yes.
Awesome. So...
Thank you, Erin.
So there you go. So make sure you check out Erin, and she can be found at erinhaysbooks.com. And she's also on Facebook, and I'll have all those links. We will put all the links up on our website. And Erin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We know you're really busy, and it's really cool hearing about your career. And we're very, both Lori and I are very excited to see where you go.
It was great talking to you guys. So glad to be a part of this.
Thank you so much. And remember to check back next week when we'll have an all-new interview with another author. And let's see a filled debate, Erin, about Star Wars. So anyways, this week our book review is called The Unseen. And yes, we did another book called The Unseen, but this is a totally other unseen book.
It was published quite a while ago, wasn't it?
It was. I think it was a reprint from 2003. We picked it up at Walmart when they had like these really cool black and white special covers where you put the books side by side and the cover like matched up like puzzle pieces. It was really cool. So The Unseen is actually by Richie Tankersley Cusick, and it's horror YA, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So if you're an adult, you can read it and enjoy it. And if you're a teenager, you can also read it and enjoy it. And there are some really, really disturbing scenes in this book series. Well, it's two books, part one and part two. And there was actually 4 books in 2 volumes. So and Walmart had put them out in a special cover, but now they you can get it anywhere. And Lori's the one who told me about it and told me to read it. So it's about a young girl named Lucy who moves to a new town, and she starts feeling like she's being stalked by something or someone. And there's this very creepy scene in a graveyard. And then after that, she's just the whole world around her. She has no idea who she can trust, who she can depend on. Who's telling the truth, who's telling lies. And there's these two mysterious young men who enter their life, and no, they're not Jacob and Edward. They actually are very mysterious and very creepy. And it's really an unsettling book, I would say.
Yeah.
And in fact, the ending, you and I discussed the ending in depth and had our theories about the ending. I do think I know exactly what the ending means, but it's really one of those books that you finish and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
So when you read it, did you just feel like you had a bunch of creepiness just hanging on you all the time?
Yeah, I mean, it was like you know, like you'd be reading it, and I usually read at night in bed, and it'd be like the heebie-jeebies while I'm laying there in bed, and it's like, what's downstairs? Did somebody just walk in my apartment? You know, it was sort of just, you know.
I'm not afraid of the dark. I actually have to sleep in a completely blackened room. And I sleep.
I'm not usually am, but sometimes stuff just gets to me.
And this book got to me because I think I slept the lamp on and my husband turned it off. Like, why has she got the lamp on? You know, the villain was really scary because you do see points of view from the villain's.
you get to see from the villain's point of view, but you don't really know what their name is or what he looks like. He's very powerful, and he's basically stalking the heroine, and he's not Edward.
It's not like a romance thing, really.
It's really creepy. It is supernatural, and I think that's even,
And when it first started, you had no idea it was supernatural.
No,
at least I didn't. I just thought it was just a horror book, and then it just starts and it's a slow turn. It sort of just starts turning that way.
Yeah, and the lead character, Lucy, she's not perfect. She makes mistakes. Of course, she's a teenage girl. But I realized when I was reading it and when I kind of reflected back that she comes under the influence of the big bag pretty quickly. I mean, he's twisting, or I just don't want to give too much away. This is really one of those books that if you want to read something really spooky, unsettling, unnerving, the kind of book that's going to make you turn on a lamp next to your bed while you're, you know, trying to sleep, or get up and check all your locks on your doors, or go get, you know, a crucifix or an amulet or something to ward off evil. This is kind of that book. I mean, it got to me slowly too. I have to say, it kind of like.
Yeah. It definitely took a while for me to even get into the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first, I was like, I'm going to read it, you know, but at first I was like, I'm not even sure I like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, I do like this.
It's unsettling. I think that's what's really clever about it, is just how unsettling the book is. The further you go into it, the more disturbed you become. And I think it's also because it doesn't give you, like, it's not one of those books that's just like throwing all the blatant answers in your face. It actually makes you think. It actually makes you consider what's happening. Am I right on that? I mean,
yeah.
So I gave it 5 stars. I liked it a lot.
I gave it 4 just because the beginning was harder for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking up to see if she's still publishing stuff, and I don't think she is.
She has a huge backlist, like massive backlist, that I would love to get my hands on. And I think she said something about she was looking into getting it out. I hope if she gets it back, she just self-publishes, because I think I would read every single one of her books. And this is another problem with publishing. Like, if your book goes out of print, if your publisher doesn't decide to put it out in ebook, your book may just disappear unless you get all the rights back. And if you get the rights back, you can either sell it to another publisher, but chances are another publisher is not really going to want to pick it up, or you can self-publish. And I hope she self-publishes, because I really want to get my hands on some of her other work.
I remember when Walmart put out Spirit Walk, I messaged you right away.
Yeah.
I was like, she's got another book at Walmart.
Yeah, and that was a sad story too, because I really enjoyed, the first one was not as strong as the second one. The first one was a little weak. The second one was really good. Again, it was an omnibus of 2 books. And I really liked the world, and I liked the characters. And she said that the publisher decided not to go forward with the series, even though she had more book ideas for these characters. So again, it goes back to, I really hope she discovers self-publishing, because I would definitely pick up her books. So again, our recommend for this week, if you want something supernatural, creepy, check under your bed, make sure nothing's there, it's The Unseen Omnibus, and it's by Richie Tankersley Cusick. And you can get more information about it on our blog. So to finish up this episode, we're announcing the book of the month for May. And I do believe our producer Jennifer suggested this book. It's called Rise Again, a Zombie Thriller by Ben Tripp. And I've already bought my ebook to start reading it. And I usually do not read in the genre I'm writing in. So this is going to be a little bit of a challenge for me, because I'm writing zombies right now. So, but again, it's Rise Again by Ben Tripp, and we'll put that on our blog. So if you want to pick it up and read along with us, Lori and I are going to discuss what we've read so far, and then we're going to go ahead and maybe discuss it a bit on our Facebook fan page. And we really would love for you to join us. So again, Rise Again, a Zombie Thriller by Ben Tripp is our book of the month for May. And Lori and I have been discussing this, and we would really like for authors to suggest their books. Right, Lori?
Yes.
Even if you're an indie, we would love for you to suggest your book on our fan page.
Yes. You can suggest it, and we can read it as our book of the month and have you come on and talk about it with us.
Yes, we would love to do that. So if you're listening to this and you're an author, recommend your book. Our fans on the Facebook page will vote and decide which book they want to read. But it gives you a great opportunity to find new readers and to possibly end up on this podcast. So I'm excited about doing a monthly discussion, because it's a challenge. It challenges me to read something that maybe I wouldn't have picked up normally, because I don't read zombie books normally. So,
it's just challenged me to read in general.
I know, because you can, like, when you're writing, you kind of like you're reading your own stuff constantly, or you're reading a friend's, you're beta reading, and then you're like, I gotta read another book. But I love to read, and it's weird that reading sometimes can feel like a chore. But yeah. Please join us. I think it's going to be fun. So wrapping up episode 4, we'll be back in episode 5. We're going to have some more great guests. I am booking them now. I think we're going to be booked all the way through June. So if you're interested in being a guest on the show, please make sure to visit our website and check out the guidelines for, can't even talk.
It's just kind of like a form.
A form, yeah. Just fill out the form and send it to us so we can see where to contact you and what you've been writing and what you've been doing. And we'd love to have you on. And I'm just excited that we made it to episode 4 and my computer hasn't exploded and the world hasn't ended.
I'm surprised my internet has not dropped out during... Because my internet's like, nah. Throughout the day, I'll be like talking to somebody and then I'll get a message. This was not sent. And I look down the corner and it's like, nah. I don't want to be on right now.
I know. We've been pretty lucky. I mean, well, we've had some technical issues, but nothing dire. So, yay, knock on wood. But, again, thank you for listening in. Thank you, Erin Hayes, for being our guest and doing her giveaway and having free fiction on our website, on our blog section. I'm just so excited about that. And thank you, Lori, for being such a great co-host. Seriously.
Thank you.
So until episode 5, I hope you have a great week, and we will see you in the near future. Be safe and don't get into too much trouble. And if you do, make sure you give us the scoop.
Yeah. So email me.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast. Find us on Facebook. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Visit our website at bnwdpodcast.com or email us at wickeddreamspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.